Hello there, West Liberty. I'm Liam, and you are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. And today, I am joined with one of the founding members of the band Crack the Sky, as well as one of the many creative geniuses behind Nickelodeon's iconic sound, Mr. Ricky Witkowski.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm trying to recover from that Steeler debacle, but... Other than that, I'm doing good.
That game was pretty hard to watch with all the delays and everything, and T.J. Watt getting hurt.
I could have predicted we were going to lose that game. Anytime we're favored to win, it usually ends up ugly. You know, and we play down too much. But, you know, we don't want to waste time talking about that Steelers, do we?
Yeah, we'll get to talking about you. So, I guess we'll start with how did you initially get introduced to Nickelodeon?
I can tell you exactly. I was with the band Crack the Sky, as you mentioned there. This was like 1976. A guy named Albie Hecht came to work for the record label that I was signed to, and we just immediately hit it off as friends, and he ended up getting involved with the band, and he's a real aggressive go-getter. He was a Columbia grad, and he loved our band. And we put out our third album. The band kind of broke up for a period. My friend went to work for a creative ad agency called Fred Allen. And Fred Allen had the account for MTV Networks, okay?
Oh, wow.
And they were the creative designers of MTV. He was working for that company, and he turned me on to the music people there and just connected me with them. And then he started throwing work my way down in West Virginia here. And I was introduced to a guy named Tom Pomposello, who was the original creator of the Nickelodeon. He's the guy that came up with that, and he was a music producer, and we hit it off very, very, very well, and we developed a very deep friendship, and he started throwing all kind of work my way, and then Albie ended up leaving Fred Allen and starting his own video company called Worldwide Biggies. He started creating shows, game shows. He did pilots for shows. One of them happened to be Guts, and he said, "Hey, I need a theme song for this show." He did the theme song. He did a pilot. He sold it to Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon loved it. And the next thing you know, he's working for Nickelodeon. They bought him out, his company, and he just went to working directly with Nickelodeon. And then he just climbed the ladder. He got up to being vice president of TV, film, and entertainment. He brought in the Rugrats. He brought in SpongeBob.
Oh my goodness! Really? Wow.
And he would always just throw work my way. and between him and Tom Pomposello, who also worked for Nickelodeon, you know, I got in the club.
You were at the right place at the right time. Oh wow!
Exactly. Mold. Yep. And our friendship continues to this day with Albie Hecht. He went from being vice president of Nickelodeon. It came time for them to be. His next move would have been president, and they ended up making this woman a president. So he ended up doing a sideward move. He went and created Spike TV for television. He was the CEO of that. Then he went from that into forming a movie production company with his wife called Shine Global, and they did documentaries that highlighted the children's struggles. What was that?
That was me accidentally turning the automation on. Okay. Sorry about that.
But anyway, That's okay. So we continue to this day. We still work. I got to do music for an Academy Award winning film his company produced. He now has a company called Pocket Watch. It's an alternative kids network that produces. They have their own channel, but they also produce shows and license them back to Nickelodeon and other things. And he created a show called Ryan's Mystery Playdate. And now this Ryan kid is like he has his own float for the Macy's Day Parade and everything. He's got a movie coming out called Ryan's World. And, so he continues to stay active in the business, and he keeps throwing work my way. So I'm very, very, very fortunate to know him.
If you can talk about it, what is, like, one of the recent, I guess, things you've done with Nickelodeon? Or is there anything that you might be, working on now that, can talk about?
I can talk about it. The most recent successful thing I've done was I did the theme song for a show called Ryan's Mystery Playdate, and it ran for like 5 seasons, and it was it became a hit on Nickelodeon. It was one of their big shows, and then he had some offshoots of that show, and now, like I said, there's a movie, and I just did a remake of the original theme song. Like a dance remix for the movie, and they're going to be using dialogue from the movie in this remix, and it's going to play over the credits of the movie. So that's probably the most recent thing. That just went out and got signed off on like a week or so ago. That's pretty fair.
Yeah. So, I guess, how did you get initially introduced to music?
Like so many other people in my age, I watched the Beatles on Ed Sullivan Show February 9th, 1964, and it changed my life. Right at that moment, I knew that I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be a Beatle, and like so many other people I know, B.E. Taylor being one of them. All just got inspired by that, my folks and my mom and dad and my sister, they were all just music lovers. There was always music going on in the house, so I was exposed to music from when I was in the womb, I guess. And so I just always loved it, and basically I can trace it all to that day watching them. And then I talked my folks into, I wanted to play drums first. I felt like I'm a rhythm kind of guy. And so I talked them into buying me a drum set. They got me a Christmas present when I was 12. They bought me a drum set from Sears catalog. and then after I started playing drums, I would have guys from school would come over to the house. They'd bring their guitars. And I would say, "Oh man, show me that! Show me it! How'd you do that?" I just love music. So, and then I talked my folks into buying me a guitar when I turned 16. So then I was in bands and I played drums, and then a couple guys we'd switch off in the bands. I'd get out and play guitar. One of the guys would jump behind the drums. And so I was doing dual role kind of thing then. Then it just became, then guitar just kind of took over. So I still love playing the drums, but I've made most of my living, most of the time as a musician, it's been playing guitar.
That's the iconic Ricky Wachowski thing, but I know at the BE shows, the dueling drums between you and BC, that's probably my favorite, one of my favorite parts of the entire show.
Same here.
And I guess what inspired the name Crack the Sky?
Oh, okay. Well, we would basically, it was a gift from God, is what I have to say. We had a band, and we had several names. We couldn't land on a name we liked. We were playing for a while. We were called Words. We were called Archangel for a while. And we were working on our demo, and making trips back and forth to New York City. And we were playing Name the Band one day on our way back from a recording session. We had an old mail truck. It had no radio in it or anything. So me and John Palumbo, the principal writer from the band, we're playing this name game. They just tossing names back around. And then we were in the Pocono Mountains. And I swear, there was a bolt of lightning that just really, I've never been that close to lightning before, and it's like struck in front of us. And I blurted out the words, Pastor Scott! Like that. Yeah, I mean, it just came out of my mouth. And we both just like looked at each other like, dun, 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 dun.
Okay. There it is.
it's just from that point on, I was like, okay, that's our name. And it was sent from the heavens.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick 30-second break, and then we will be back. And I'm going to ask you a couple more questions, I guess, about your time with Nick and some things that if you were going to tell somebody just starting out in the industry, like what are some things you would talk about? But all right. So this is our distinctive discussion. I am Liam, and you are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal, and we will be right back.
All right.
Driving while intoxicated or under the influence of any substance is an irresponsible and dangerous act that poses a significant threat to public safety. The consequences of this behavior can be devastating and lead to severe legal repercussions, such as a first-time offense can result in fines of up to $10,000. Drunk driving is responsible for over 31% of all fatal car accidents in the United States, and in 2021 alone, over 13,000 people lost their lives due to this avoidable behavior. This is why it's extremely important everyone understands the risks of drunk driving and takes responsible actions to prevent such senseless tragedy. Some of these things you can do are finding a designated driver, staying home, or leaving your keys with a trusted friend who is not under the influence. So next time you're tempted to drive after drinking, just remember, it's best to stay home or find a ride with someone who's not drunk, because it's simply not worth risking your life over. This message has been brought to you by WGLZ Radio. Alrighty, we are back. I am Liam, and you are listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. I'm here with Mr. Ricky Witkowski, and so, Ricky.
Yes.
What would be, I guess, what are some of the challenges you faced in the industry, and what would be some advice you'd give to somebody just getting started?
Challenges in the music industry is very challenging.
Just everything.
And it's very hard to make a living making music, and because people don't buy music anymore. They stream it and they expect it for free. So I mean, that's very challenging. But you can always. Live performing music will never go away, and that's something I definitely, encourage people to get out and perform. Find people that you're compatible with. Get a band together, or if you're just a solo artist, go out and start getting in front of people, coffee houses or open stages, and get out there and start performing your music, and. You said a word. Your show's passionate. You said, or something.
Passionately vocal. Yeah.
Passionate vocal. Be passionate about your music. About your creative juices. Whatever inspires you. Be passionate about it. Do it with all your heart and soul. And anything if you can dream it, you can do it. Kind of thing. If there's something that's driving you. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do it. Just, keep your eyes focused and just keep listening to that inner voice. and keep they draw upon the creative muse. You know, it's really there's nothing like the creative process for me. Like making music is to coin the term from the Visa commercials, it's priceless. I mean, you can't put a price on the feeling you get when you make your own song, create your song, or when you're jamming. You know, you're mm-hmm. playing with people. You're in the zone, and you're just playing, and you're one with your instrument. You know, there's nothing compares to that, and the feelings you get from that, you can't put a price on. So, I would say, you know, that would be my biggest piece of advice: just be passionate about what you do.
Keep moving forward. Keep being passionate and moving
forward in a positive direction.
That's oh yes,
yes, absolutely.
So, in you know, constantly just you know keeping on moving and being positive. What are some of the major artists that Crack the Sky has worked with?
Oh, that's
I heard something about you working with Supertramp, which is really cool.
Oh yeah, well, as far as working with, we did a lot of open dates. We toured with Supertramp. We did I think 17 dates with them, and this was when the album Even in the Quietest Moment. That's when we got to play. It was at the Fox Theater in Atlanta. They got awarded their gold records after the show that night, but we were on like 17 dates with them. Very, very good band, very nice guys. Technically perfect, like live performances. Their sound and lights and their delivery of the songs. But they weren't a ball of energy on stage. They were kind of, you know, they let the songs speak for themselves. But they were a great act. We got to do, I did about the most dates we did with the band was the Atlanta Rhythm Section. They were big in the 80s. I don't know if you're aware of them. And Imaginary Lover was one of their big songs. But, I got to open for Journey. We did a bunch of dates with Journey. In fact, this is before Steve Perry was in the band. We were in Madison, Wisconsin, and in the middle of the set, they said, "Hey, we would like to bring out a friend of ours that wants to sing a few songs for you."
Just real nonchalantly.
Yeah, and it was Steve Perry, you know, and if he wasn't in the band, this is before that they recorded anything with him. So I guess they were kind of like timing him. And so I got to see that. We were one of the few acts that got to open for Frank Zappa. We did two dates with Frank Zappa. I got to open for the Electric Light Orchestra. I got to open for Boston, Rush, Kansas. There was just a ton of bands back in the, like from 1975 to 1980. That was like our big run when we were kind of cooking with gas back in the day.
Vitamin L was released in 1983, yeah. That was at the on MTV. It was, you know, but it hit in the number one charts, right?
It was a number one song in Pittsburgh and across the board. I mean, we lit up Pittsburgh. We, you know, we were the house band at the place called the Dancer Club in Weirton, and at the time, Weirton, the drinking age in Weirton in West Virginia was 18. In Pennsylvania, it was 21. And I think it might have been 21 in Ohio at one point, too. So it was like every Saturday night, every other Saturday night, we played the Dancer Club, and we would pack the place. And we would, you know, that song, we were playing the song live way before the record came out. And we did some dates, a tour with Donnie Iris. We opened for him, and we debuted the song with him. So the song kind of had a reputation before it even got recorded. You know, we were playing it live, and then when it finally came out, we were signed to MCA Records, and we They while we were recording that album, the president of the label got fired. They brought Irv Azoff into MCA, and he came in and cleaned house. MCA had like 49 acts, and they kept 7 and dropped 42 or something. Mm. So we were in that transition period. He came. The album was already in progress, so they put the record out. The guy that got assigned to the label, our A&R guy, he got fired and everything. So we had like lost our connection there. But they kind of put the record out because it was already under contract, and so it was like a afterthought. And they, but the minute it came out, it started catching, like Pittsburgh radio picked up Vitamin L. They just started playing that song, and it became like number one. There was a station B94, and they had the top 8 of 8, and for like 3 weeks in a row, it was number one. And it got to be there was a TV show called Evening Magazine that was produced out of Pittsburgh. They did a story about Vitamin L, about how it was just a phenomenon. It was like lighting up the every radio station that played it. You know, it was lighting up the phones for requests and blah blah blah. And so our manager videotaped that show and sent it to the president, the new president of MCA, and say, "Hey, look what's happening in Pittsburgh.
Hey, what are these guys doing?
Yeah, and would you consider, you know, working this record?" You know, when they released it, it was lip service. They released 4 other records the week that they released ours, and we were like the 5th priority. They didn't really promote it all. They just put it out there. And so then after we got a response back, they said, "Okay, we're going to make Vitamin L a single. We're going to go ahead and do the single." So they took a week or so, they released it as a single, and then it started making some noise. Stations outside of Pittsburgh started picking it up, but it went on for like a month or so, and then finally they decided to commit to making a video. And by the time the video got recorded and released, it was already an old song in Pittsburgh. It had been out for like 3 months, and we kind of lost a little steam. The station could only keep playing the song and reporting it to the trades for so long. And the week that our video got released, we lost our bullet on the Billboard charts. And so MTV put it in light rotation and saw that we lost our bullet. It had a very limited run, and then it kind of fizzled out. We got the number 66 in the nation on that. The number one in Pittsburgh.
Number one in Pittsburgh, but you were still on the nation charts. That's so cool. Oh, and on MTV.
Yeah, we had little pockets. Like in Boston, it was taken off. It was. I truly believe that if the record company would have got behind it from the get-go, like most companies do, and they decide when they put a record out, they decide, okay, this is going to be the emphasis cut. Here's a single. We're going to promote it. We're going to put so many people on the promotional staff, you know, and they're going to work the record. You know, they didn't work our record. It did what it did on its own, and it was all after the fact. And we still, you know, we still charted nationally, but we got so close, but it wasn't a cigar, you know. And, I did get a cool moment where we got to open for Boy George in Columbus, Ohio, and it was like, when our song was really starting to take off, you know, and this the video had just come out on MTV, and we got to do like a 45-minute set at the Columbus Arena, and we killed, and it was like really a great night. And we drove home from Columbus, which was like a 2.5-hour drive. I got home, it was like 1 a.m. I turned on the TV. And I turned it to MTV, and I literally, the first time I turned it on, and the DJ came on the screen and said, his name is Mark Goodman. He said, "Hey, there's a new band out of Pittsburgh that's making a lot of noise, and they just released a video, and we're going to play it for you now. Here's Vitamin L." So I came from that real big high of opening for Boy George, and seeing our coming home and seeing ourselves on MTV, I'm like, This is We've made it. We're on our way. And then that was it. I saw it one time, and the rest is history. It just kind of fizzled out. And so, story of my life, basically. Close, but no cigar.
All right.
Kind of same thing happened with Crack the Sky. You know, our album, we came out, our first album did real well, but never really, it was released by an independent label and didn't get the promotion that we'd go out. We were on tour and we'd go play in cities and our record wouldn't be in the record stores, you know, and stuff like that. But anyway, I don't know. I'm done talking about myself. You've heard enough about me lately.
Oh, no, it's been fantastic. I thank you so much for coming on. And
oh, no worries.
Yeah, I hope to talk sometime soon. And I thank you so much, Ricky.
You're so welcome. Am I going to see you at the Feel the Love of Christmas shows this year? Will you make it to any of those?
Absolutely, you will.
Are we going to bust out Feliz Navidad? Do you remember coming up when you were like 5 years old?
I
on stage.
It's like super fuzzy, but I do. that was oh wow,
you were awesome.
Man.
You were awesome.
The red and the green shoes. I need to bring those back. If I'm actually, I might do that. But alrighty, well, I will talk to you sometime soon, sir. Thank you so much for being on air with me. And for anybody listening, you've been listening to 91.5 WGLZ Radio. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. See you next time.